is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
To West Africa, Niger, in the news because of a takeover by the military staff from the Democratic president, General Tchiani, now in charge. And I go to Ronan Wordsworth of Geopolitical Futures, an analyst, to look at the changing direction of Niger. Why this is important is it's part of a group of nations in West Africa that have recently replaced their democratic leadership with strong leadership from the military in some instances. We begin in Niger, however, because it involves the United States of America and a decision that is a blow to the U.S. effort to combat jihadists in West Africa, both Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Ronan, a very good day to you. The decision, not decision, to ask the U.S. to withdraw from its base outside of the capital of Niamey, is that now considered confirmed that Niger says go to Uncle Sam? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Thanks for having me. Yes, basically, last weekend, so just over a week ago, we had the military junta come out and say that they no longer wanted the U.S. presence and that they would consider their presence on the Niger soil an undermining of their sovereignty and basically illegal. Since then, we had the Washington representatives go there and try to negotiate some sort of situation where they could be allowed to stay in their base, because what actually is in Niger, there was two very essential bases for, as you said, fighting against the Islamic extremist groups throughout the Sahel, including the biggest drone base abroad that the U.S. has, which is called Air Base 201 in a town in central Niger called Agadez. And following the coup, we see that the government in Washington tried to stay out of the politics of the situation, didn't call it a coup for almost 4 months while they were basically trying to negotiate to be able to hold on to this base. There's also a second base, which is close to the capital of Niamey. Following the coup, that was demobilized. Mostly the troops were sent to Agadez to stay in the larger base, which was built at the cost of some $150 million just a few years ago. Now it looks like almost certainly they're preparing to lose that base. I'm sure they're in negotiations with other countries across the Sahel to potentially relocate. But obviously this is a big blow to the operations that were being conducted out of that base, which includes, as you say, a lot of anti-terrorism, counterinsurgency operations, fighting against the Islamic State there, the Al-Qaeda-affiliated JNIM. So I think that the relationship now looks, I would say, almost irreparably damaged between the two.
First, we check on Nigeria. Right after the coup, there were strong words from Nigeria's leader, Tinubu, about either intervening militarily or punishing Niger and other states in this grouping for their anti-democratic activities. What is the status of those threats?
Yeah, so Nigerian President Tinubu is actually the current sitting president of ECOWAS, the regional grouping, which includes Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali, the three countries that have had coups and basically then had their membership suspended. Tinubu said at the outset of the coup that this was a straw too far, basically a bridge too far, and that there was going to be strong action taken against them, as you said, threatening military intervention. They cut off the electricity to Niger, which Nigeria provides 70% of Niger's total energy requirement for their grid, as well as closing the borders, which prevents any of the cross-border trade, etc. This had a really detrimental effect maybe on the Niger economy, which was already struggling, it must be said. But I think a couple of things. He has basically backed down now. The borders have been reopened. The power is now flowing back into Niger. And it's almost back to business as usual before the coup. I think part of that is showing maybe a lack of teeth that ECOWAS as an institution has. It's unable to actually act on maybe its threats that it tried to carry out against these undemocratic governments that have come into their institution. Secondly, I think part of it is due to the internal politics within Nigeria, which has caused additional pressure on Tinubu. He's got different issues at home, including inflation and like the cost of living there is skyrocketing. Plus, if you look at the northern regions of Nigeria near the border of Niger, they're a completely different ethnic group, much more similar to Niger. And there's a lot of informal cross-border trade between the two. And obviously, for these farmers and stuff like this, the closure of the border had a big impact on their ability to conduct their regular trade. And so they were part of the pressure against Tinubu to reopen the border and resume the relations, I guess. And so now I think, yeah, basically we're back to business as usual before the coup. Trade is going again. Borders are open.
This is Africa, however, and there's always another chapter. This time we turn to adversaries. The last time we talked, Ronan, the Russians were present in many of these states as Africa Corps. That's a remade Wagner group. Africa Corps was standing somewhere near at hand. Is there any indication that the Russian diplomatic corps or Africa Corps had a hand in the decision at Niger to ask the U.S. to get out?
I would say it hasn't been confirmed, but in my opinion, it's very highly likely. If we look recently, Niger has signed a security agreement with Russian security forces. And then it seems what triggered the final severance of the relations a week and a half ago was potentially Washington trying to pressure the Niger government to basically have a good look at who their friends are, because there was rumors abounding also that Niger may be potentially trying to sign a agreement to send uranium to Iran, obviously one of the US's biggest strategic rivals, and has already signed this security agreement with Russia, which has entailed Russian forces, security forces being sent into Niamey, the capital, similar to the neighboring countries in Burkina Faso and Mali, who both have Russian troops stationed there, as well as Central African Republic, who have had Russian troops for almost 5 years now, supporting basically just the government forces against any risks to overthrow within the capital.
I'm glad you mentioned the Mali, Burkina Faso, because we're looking now at the Sahel. That's the shore of the Sahara. And there is a grouping called the G5, quite in addition to the idea of ECOWAS. The G5 Sahel includes Mauritania to the west and Chad to the east. So putting these all together, you have very large amounts of land, not many people, except in the cities, stretching from the Atlantic halfway across the continent, bordering Sudan and South Sudan. And all of this is organized in a fashion that suggests the Russians have taken up home base here. Is that true? Is this different than it used to be? Is this reach back to the Cold War? Do we know where the Soviets welcome in the Sahel once upon a time, Ronan? Or is this all new for Moscow's point of view?
It does sort of arc back to that Cold War mentality for sure, of trying to get a grouping aligned countries across the center of Africa there. I would say if we look at actually what's happening now, it's slightly different. The US hasn't really had the same Cold War mentality, I would say, where you have this strategic rivalry. We've seen the US want to hold on to the base in Niger, even with the Russians present there. However, as I said, that seems very unlikely now. What's more beneficial for Russia is actually the ability to extract from these countries. There's a report from last year, basically, that they believe from each country across there, they were making billions in extracting resources from Mali, from Central African Republic, from Sudan. And then obviously we've got to add to that in this next coming year, Burkina Faso, from Niger, from Libya as well. They have significant operations there. So trying to create kind of a band of friendly countries which have no other friends, I would say, that they can turn to. So they've become very dependent on Russia for security and for international assistance. Yeah. And then as part of this vulnerability, Russia is able to exploit it and then extract these resources. at a very cheap cost. And as I said, the reports say it's in the billions per year coming out of there.
Let's build a railroad, Ronan, when we come back. Ronan Wordsworth is an analyst for Geopolitical Futures. We're looking at a part of Africa that is now much in play. The U.S. out of Niger, that's the direct order from General Tiani at Niamey. The Russians into not only Niger, but across the Sahel. And a railroad, what does that mean for development of Africa and for the axis of resistance, Iran, China, Russia, perhaps North Korea? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.